You're listening to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, the show that proves no one stumbles upon success ever. With your host, Lou Need. Every Mondays and Thursdays, we deliver cold hard evidence behind the power of a robust morning routine. Get ready to be transformed by the renewal of your mind.
Hello, morning enthusiasts. Welcome to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast. I am your host, Looney Lewis, and today I have the honor of introducing a very special guest to the show today, Dr. Joseph Sallustio. Dr. Joe is CEO of Claremont Lincoln University, which offers a unique higher education value proposition, being socially and environmentally conscious. The student chooses CLU because the curricula have been designed to strengthen their leadership skills. CLU's management philosophy emphasizes mindfulness, dialogue, and collaboration as powerful tools for improving institutional performance. Dr. Joe uses social media for dialogue in the sustainability and social impact community, being supported of BLM, Me Too, CSR, and so forth. Dr. Joe also is an innovative activist for the present-day higher education system and is using podcasting to become an influencer in higher ed. He's advocating for students whose colleges have closed their doors on them and the steps they can take afterwards. He's fighting for more affordable tuition, especially for master's program. Dr. Joe, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, and it's an honor, and I'm just going to make one slight correction. I'm the chief operating officer, and I don't want to make my CEO mad because I do. He's the president and CEO, and I'm doing the operation side. So just one slight adjustment, but I'm so honored to be here and very excited to talk with you today.
It is my pleasure. I apologize for that. Say COO.
Oh, it does. Okay, good.
I misread that for sure. So forgive me.
No worries.
So Dr. Joe, I'm really excited. This is a good time because even with the with what's going on and education being moved online, I'm really intrigued about where our conversation is going to go today. But before we get going, tell us a little bit about your background and your journey here thus far.
So, you know, it's funny. My background, I'm actually from Central New York. Syracuse, New York is where I was born and raised. And we call that snow country. I don't know if you're familiar.
Yeah.
But it snows all the time. And went to school there, went to State University of New York system, SUNY Oneonta. Moved to Denver after graduating college and spent almost 20 years in Denver and then now in Southern California. But my journey in higher education it's an ironic one. And I'll tell you a quick story. So when I was in my undergraduate program, you know, you always take your general education classes first, usually your freshman and sophomore years, and then you got to pick a major.
Yeah.
And I sat down with all these majors I could select from, and I had no interest in any of them. I remember my mother came to me and she said, look, there's so many choices, things for you to pick from. What are you interested in? And I said, absolutely nothing. So I hated school. I hated high school. I hated college, you know, college experience I liked, but the actual work I didn't. And so it's truly ironic that I have spent my entire life in higher education. As I got older, I really realized that I love learning and more than anything, love to change people's lives for a sustainable future. And the only way to truly do that is through education. So I love learning and I love seeing change in people when they really understand the effect it can have on society with an education as a foundation. So that's just a little bit about my background. And I've spent almost 20 years in higher education and worked with students from a certificate, non-credit, all the way up to doctoral level and helping people improve themselves.
Yeah, no, that's phenomenal. And education plays a big role in the direction that your life goes. So I'm curious, with that conversation with your mother, what did you end up choosing? Because now you're in higher ed and have your master's, I assume a PhD, if not an MD. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so I chose speech communications, which is basically a BS in BSing. So I chose the easiest possible major I could think of at that time. It did create a nice foundation of sales skills, which is, of course, I think I still use today in higher education and in presenting yourself. Went on to a master's degree in organizational leadership, and I have an educational doctorate in organizational leadership as well. So yeah, I went the easy route at the beginning and a little bit harder at the end when I'm sitting in a doctorate program with two kids trying to write a dissertation of 150 pages. It, you know, going from the kid that was interested in nothing to having to go through that whole deal was a whole other story.
Mm-hmm. Organizational leadership. That was from speech communication to leaders and working with leaders. And you do that now in your line of work, right? That education has kind of paved the way.
Yeah, I mean, Claremont Lincoln University is, you know, our curriculum is based in socially conscious education through the skills of mindfulness, dialogue, collaboration, and change. And Lumid, you know this, you're watching the news. Never in our history has there been a more important time for ethical leaders who are prepared to deal with issues in society and equality and diversity and inclusion. The only way to do that is to get an education that has the right foundation. And so there's liberal arts education, as you've known it, and people have known it through the years and going to getting a liberal arts education. We believe that our education is liberal arts education for the 21st century. Leaders have to, we have to learn how to communicate. We have technology, but we still have to learn how to talk to each other, respect each other. And that's what we teach at Claremont Lincoln.
Yeah, and that's where the leadership comes in. It's the even the soft skills play a big role, like EQ, right?
Oh, huge. Yeah, empathy, emotional intelligence, you know, knowing yourself. How do you respect somebody's opinions if you can't look internally and say, I'm not willing to accept this, or I am willing to accept this? I mean, I think there's an internal look we all have to make first. And then, you know, how do we work together? You know, people have very divergent views right now in our society. You look at, boy, we have an election coming up, and you want to talk about two divergent views of what this country can look like going forward. But how do you talk with somebody and have some respect for them instead of, you know, hitting each other in the streets like we've been doing? It's critical education right now.
Yeah. Despite your differences, how do you still respect one another, respect each other's point of views?
Exactly.
I really like that. So tell us about the podcast, the Ed Up Experience.
Yeah. So that's, we'll call this a passion project. This is my night job. Got a day job working at Claremont Lincoln University. And then I have a night job where I take all these recordings that we do over the weekends and we edit them with my two co-hosts, Elizabeth Leiba and Alvin Freitas. We've started podcasting in higher education. It was missing material. Higher ed is traditionally writing. We got a lot of academics who write a lot, but we don't have a lot of people that are putting out any type of alternative methods for consuming information. And we saw an opportunity and we've been podcasting. It's called The Ed Up Experience. We interview college presidents, university leaders, ed tech CEOs, and we talk about what's happening in higher ed. And of course, we hit it at a critical time, right? We started this in January and all of a sudden coronavirus hits and it throws higher education into complete disarray. So a lot of people have been listening. You know, we've been at it for about, well, what is this, 7 months or so. We're getting close to about 10,000 streams of our podcast and the episodes that we've put out. So it's been going very well.
Mm-hmm. And I want to know what is happening with higher ed, because I have my master's in it and went on and got my PhD in the same degree as you did, actually. And I was a professor and taught for over 5 years and noticed how it is challenging now to get students enrolled and get students in the seats. And looking at competency-based programs. So tell us, what is happening with higher ed?
Well, I think there's two major things happening. One, which has really been predicted, and it's based on demographic and age-based information, there are going to be less people who are eligible to go to college. There's just less college-aged kids than there were generations ago. People have less kids now. The baby boomers retired. They had less children than the generations before them. And so we see that. And that's going to be a trend that continues through 2025, 2026, when we're going to see a drop off of the college age population. Between now and then, as you know, higher education, along with K-12, has moved online. And that has come at great cost. It's for the institutions that were prepared, they've done well. Claremont Lincoln University, our students saw no interruption in their education because all of our classes are online. And in fact, we've expanded our enrollment during this time, because people want to go to a school that is prepared for online education. There are a number of schools that were not prepared. And you've seen some of those schools accept students back onto campus and then automatically shut down that campus because somebody gets sick and they have coronavirus that explodes. But I will tell you that then you take into account that you can go, if you're a student looking at a community college and you're in New Jersey, you could go to community college now in Texas if you want to.
Right.
You don't you aren't regionally dependent now with all these schools moving online. So the competition is heating up and students are taking time off. So there are many students that are taking a gap year because they still want to learn on ground. So there's all these factors affecting higher education enrollment. And so many schools are seeing declines. There's a story about George Washington University that just came out the other day, and they're seeing a 17% decline in their enrollment. That has huge implications. Take on top of that, that fall sports have been affected, and the revenue that colleges take in from fall sports take into effect that fundraising is being affected because so much of the fundraising dollars in higher education are being moved to healthcare to fight COVID. And you call it a perfect storm. Fundraising is affected, athletic revenue is affected, and tuition revenue is affected. That puts schools in a really shaky position, especially those that don't have billion-dollar endowments like Harvard or Johns Hopkins. You know, we're talking about a lot of small private schools that could be facing closure. So you're seeing more mergers, more consolidations, more collaborations, more consortiums, because schools are having to depend on each other for services instead of going it alone right now.
About time.
Exactly right about that. Exactly right. So, you know, it's also shifting. You know, things are changing by the day, to be honest.
Yeah, I like the sound of the acquisition and merging and coming together. It's like schools are like churches, right? Why do we need five on one block?
Exactly.
If we come together, we can collaborate. You can have it online. And I think that it will be easier because we're moving in an era where, well, it is the knowledge era. Yes, it's about the skills acquired also in the field and experience, but also there's that need to focus and niche down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of opportunity for schools to work together in more robust ways through, you know, articulation agreements or otherwise. You know, there's also a connection to business and industry that has to be made. We really have to get people back to work, and we have a responsibility to do that in higher education. The only way to do that is to know what an employer wants and to make sure that we're customizing curriculum to give people the skills that they need to go get the job, right? That's going to be a big thing for us to look at in higher education as we move forward through the coronavirus.
Yeah, and I agree. What about, you know, the decline in enrollment across the country, right? With the pandemic and schools are shutting down, they're not going to school. I know you have a marketing background and a sales background. What are some secrets, some tips to increase enrollment?
Oh boy, you're talking about the holy grail question right here. You know, I think there are a lot. One of the most important things that you can do, and I'm not going to say it's a secret, but we'll call it a scientific method, is split testing. The concept is split testing, right? So think about it like this, Lenny. You are thinking about going to college and you go to a college website and there's a picture on that website because a lot of colleges put pictures of their students doing things on the website so you can get a sense of what it might be like to be there, right? Let's say right now you go to look at college and on that site, there's pictures of students in groups shaking hands or giving high five. Mm-hmm. Now you're somebody that's worried about coronavirus. Does that send the right message to you about what college needs to look like because you're nervous? It may not. So I say split test. Send half of your new users, people who are interested in college, to that picture of people in groups high-fiving, and then send half of your students who might be new users, who might be potential students, to another homepage that you set up a replication of your homepage. And on that page, there's a picture of a person standing on the top of a mountain with lots of open space at your university. Or, you know, you show a classroom that's socially distant to show what learning might be there to make people more realistic of what the expectation looks like. What message converts those students to enrollments more often? And so split testing, you can take split testing methodology and you can scale that into anything. Think about podcasting. You know, you and I are both podcasting. We can split test anytime. We could put our picture on as our main artwork for our podcast and see if we get more listeners, or we could put a picture of a microphone and headphones and see if we get more listeners, right? Yeah. So that you can split test anything. And I think that's one of the biggest secrets.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, and I didn't think of it that way. Actually looking at tailoring your landing page or your website first page to the new users or new students or versus the current student, depending on what they're into, because that again is tapping into the branding piece of it, right? Looking, trying to get into the mind of the prospect student.
Right, exactly right. It's all about tailoring our messaging to where students are right now. And, you know, we need to get in the minds of people and figure out, there's a big thing called risk tolerance. And we all have a different risk tolerance when it comes to the future right now. And so we have to discover what people's individual tolerance is.
Excellent. So any other tips on how to increase enrollment growth?
Sure. I think, you know, split testing is the main one, but I think that on the other side of it, it's, you know, we have to run efficiencies. You know, internet marketing is so important, and as schools are they're moving online, you're stepping into a whole nother marketing arena of online marketing. Geo-targeting, geo-fencing, you know, really discovering who's your student profile, taking the time, who am I marketing to? And then finding those people where they are, right? Mm-hmm. And you can, with online marketing, you can market nationwide, you can market by city, you can market by job title, by age. You can look at any of those factors when it comes to internet marketing. And I think that's a big space that's going to see improvement over time, is how people are marketing. Colleges and universities are really spending time to learn internet marketing. So that's a big spot. You know, I'd say split test, but at the same time, invest in the areas you're not familiar with.
Mm-hmm. Even on when you were saying that, I'm thinking about Facebook groups or Facebook lookalikers, right? Looking at your current roster and targeting that population using Facebook ads and whatnot and marketing that way.
Exactly right. And it's a scientific method. It's not really art. It's about measuring incremental improvements.
Yeah. As a doctor, I want to pick your brain right now about the effect that schools, without schools being online, how's that affecting more of the students? You know, the losing that social piece, that one-on-one interaction with teachers, that face-to-face interaction. How are they coping? How can students cope in this time?
Well, that's a really big question, because we know mental health right now is just so critical, right? And we're seeing it across. I say it like this, and when I've given presentations about this, where we've seen a perfect storm of disruption. We have social unrest, we have financial unrest, and we have health unrest. So those are like the big three categories for people. When students, parents, adults, it doesn't matter. When you're talking about, you know, parents who've lost their jobs, and now they're worried about, you know, putting food on the table. Oh, wait a second. I can't go interview for a job because I'm worried about coronavirus. And is this company even hiring right now? And then, oh, by the way, you know, there's so much social disruption right now. What does that mean for hiring practices? What does that mean, you know, when you have people rioting or companies looking at hiring or protesting? If you're talking about cities, they put those things on hold. So there's just this perfect storm of unrest. And what is that doing to people in general? You know, for students, it's a big deal. You know, think about a high school senior right now going into their senior year, who I got a neighbor of mine that she's in she's 17 going to her high school year, and she hasn't seen her friends barely at all. What does that do to you?
Right.
And the value of education, then you cascade that down and up, right? For me, boy, I graduated with a doctorate and I was ready to go to my graduation and didn't have it. I had it online. And I appreciate what my school did, but I was wanting my kids to see it, and they didn't get to see me walk across the stage. So there's so many reverberating effects, and mental health is just a huge part of this. How do we stay healthy at home? And so as students are online and parents are online, that's a big concern, mental health. And how's everybody doing? I think the answer is it depends.
Yeah, it takes a toll on the physical health too, because, you know, there's a lack of movement that takes place too, that affects the psyche.
Exactly right.
Altogether. Thank you for sharing that. Now let's dive into more of your morning routine, because I'm pretty sure it was very different when you were writing your dissertation than it is now. So tell us, how do you get up, dress up, and show up?
Well, I'll tell you, my morning routine comes in two phases. It comes where I am a dad. So my morning routine completely revolves around my kids and getting them up and getting them to school. I say that's a defined morning routine, because I've got to get those, you know, with my wife, get them breakfast, get them fed, get them out the door. And that's to get them ready for school. That's a big part of this. Beyond that, my mental preparation, boy, this is going to sound silly, but every morning, once my kids are taken care of, I immediately put workout clothes on. And I do this because working from home, it's the way I put pressure on myself to stay healthy. Because when I mentally prepare for my day and I get my water and I get my coffee and I get settled at my desk, I have to change, right? I can't wear my pajamas. A lot of people can roll out of bed and wear their pajamas in a work from home situation. I have to change, but I'm not going to put on a shirt and tie. That would be ridiculous, especially it's been 110 degrees where I am, and I'm working in my bedroom, which makes it very, very hot. But I do put on clothes to work out, because it forces me to think about being healthy at some point in my day. And without that balance and force of health, I become a more miserable person to be around, for lack of a better way to say it. And there are days when I get so busy and I don't work out, I have to then change out of my workout clothes at the end of the day, knowing that I didn't work out. And the amount of guilt I feel puts me into motivational mode the next day to be healthy. When it comes to my morning routine, that is the biggest thing that I do, is that I am in my gym clothes. As soon as I can get a break to go work out, I go work out. I keep a shirt on the side that has a collar in case I have to make a meeting. And yes, I'm in gym shorts and a collared shirt. Absolutely. 100%, just like all the rest of us are, and don't want to admit. But then I throw my Under Armour shirt on and I head down to the gym. I have a gym in the garage and I force myself to work out. Without that work-life balance, without that focus on health, I don't know that I could survive working from home. It is a key for me.
Yeah, and you're designing your environment for that one goal so that you can push yourself out to actually get some exercise. It's key when you're implementing or trying to incorporate a new habit to involve your environment, make it visible. Right. And so that's what you're doing. You're putting the clothes on. Some people put their shoes in by the door so they can see it. Some people sometimes lay out the clothes the night before so that you wake up, you have no excuse not to act on it. Some people even sleep in their gym clothes.
Exactly right. You know, and then the other thing I do is I make sure that I don't bring too many, you know, because my office is in my bedroom, right? In a two-story house. I make sure that I don't bring enough supplies up here in terms of water and coffee and food that I don't have to get up. Mm-hmm. I only bring the minimum that I can so that I'm forced to get up out of my chair and go downstairs and up the stairs and down the stairs and up the stairs to get new, you know, fill up my water or whatever it is so that I moving around. Otherwise I could sit here all day and never move, never stand up.
You're priming your environment. Yeah. I love that. Thank you for sharing it.
Yeah.
Any mental primeness that you do, meditation, affirmations, what's that like for you to mentally prepare yourself for the day?
Here's what I'll tell you with that. I don't necessarily mentally prepare for the day, but there are some times where I could in the morning after my kids are taken care of, where I could put in the work to get my exercise done in the morning before I start my day. But I don't like to do that. I like to get started with my workday and tackle a little bit of work to know that I'm okay mentally and that I've responded to people and taken care of their needs at my role before I step into my own needs and my own health needs, if that makes sense. So I sit down, you know, when it comes to actual activity, I sit down, I turn all my stuff on, and I do take the time though, before I start engaging in conversation, to get through some of the to-dos I have on my list to make me feel comfortable and productive before I really jump into taking those calls that can happen minute by minute and really soak up all of my time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can be time consuming. You have to time block in that case a lot. Yep.
Well, and I'll tell you this too, and you'll appreciate this. Every meeting I'm doing, somebody's sending me a Zoom. I am intentionally, from a mental standpoint, trying to make more phone calls and get off camera. Because I do feel Zoom fatigue happen a lot where I just don't want to be on camera anymore. I don't want to feel the pressure of that. So, you know, making an actual phone call instead of doing every meeting by Zoom is kind of like the new thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can understand that. Tell us about how can we connect with you? How can we find you?
You can find me in a couple of places. You can find me in our EdUp Experience podcast website, www.edupexperience.com. Of course, you can find me on LinkedIn. Just look up Joe Sallustio and Claremont Lincoln University, claremontlincoln.edu. You can connect with me through there. Those are the three primary ways people can get a hold of me.
This has been insightful, Morning Enthusiast. This has been Dr. Joe, and he emphasizes a lot on split testing, on the ways to grow for enrollment growth for your university or in schools, and also looking at the efficiencies, doing some marketing around geo-targeting and geo-fencing for getting some enrollees in the door. And I really appreciate your insight on how people can cope during this time with schools being closed. And so, Dr. Joe, I really appreciate your presence today.
Thank you so much. It's really been an honor, and I'm so happy to talk with you.
All right, morning enthusiasts, that's it for today's show. Thank you for tuning in. If you love the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, We'd love to hear from you. So go ahead and subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or Google Play. While you're at it, tell a friend about the show. Be sure to visit bestmorningroutineever.com and our Facebook group to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic free bonus content. Until next time.